Hey, good afternoon, EDUCAUSE. It's 3:30. I hope you got your caffeine. My name is Pete Juvenile. Today's session is going to be run by Joshua Kim. He's the Director of Learning and Technology for the Master of Healthcare Delivery Science Program at Dartmouth College and an ECAR Fellow. He has a PhD from Brown University. Josh blogs at http://, I love saying that, www.insidehighered.com/blogs/technology and learning. There are going to be evaluations ready for you after the session. You can get it from the link on the email kiosk main page anytime after the session, or from the link on the conference program page until October 29th. With that, here's Joshua.
Hey everyone. Everyone here, hello, stand behind the microphone. That's the record. All right, Pete's going to work the PowerPoint, and we're going to work together. And one of the things to help do is kind of move kind of quickly so we can kind of talk to each other a bit and talk amongst ourselves. So we're going to talk about lecture capture and YouTube, and the view that lecture capture plus YouTube can equal open learning. But before we jump into this, I just kind of want to get a sense of like who's here and what people do. So who here are people who work in like learning design or work on help with course development? Okay. So if you're not doing that, we are like kind of like systems people, like we do like infrastructure. And anyone here
Alright, so that's a little bit less fun to walk around, but is that good? Okay, so what I hope to do is go through these slides as quickly as possible, kind of get the ideas out there, and then have all of us kind of talk to each other, kind of break up, this is what this room is designed for, and then report back for what's going on. So the goal here is, as soon as I get through the slides, is to discuss and report, and really discuss and report these two things of the obstacles that will of getting to where we're going to talk about getting and some of our solutions. So I'm going to go through these slides really quickly, I want you to feel free to do a number of things. I want you to feel free to stop me if I'm going too quick or if you want to do something. I want you to feel free that if this is like not working for you, to get up and go, right? So you should just do it however you like, but please stop me. Is everyone clear about how we're going to kind of do this? All right. So who here has read either of these books? Which one? Yep. What'd you think? Yeah, it's great. Anyone else read either of these books? All right, I highly recommend that you pick these up and check out. I've been incredibly influenced by this whole open education movement. I think if we look at our institutions going 5-10 years into the future, we're going to have all our stuff out there, open, accessible, transparent. I think that this is the major overriding trend. You know, we talk a lot about cost, access, completion, but openness is something that I'm totally into. And DIYU talks a lot about educational productivity. So that's kind of the context. The other context that I've been influenced by is the edupunk movement. Who here has heard of the edupunks? Okay, so the edupunks basically are very critical of how we do campus enterprise IT. They very much think that needs to be democratized. Oh, awesome. They think it needs to be democratized and shared out, and they're very critical of us. I don't agree with all that they say, but I think they're a very important group to critique what we do each day. So, in the argument that I want to make is that presentation capture or lecture capture is one of the best tools possible to support the open education movement. That we often don't put these two together. The lecture capture systems that are really hot, they're growing. We heard with the McGraw-Hill purchase of Tegrity. And the open education movement, I want to try to find a way with you guys to bring this together. I believe that lecture capture or presentation capture could be a disruptive technology in higher education. But it's the way we're going, it won't be that. I think it could be disruptive, but unless we change our course where we are, we're going to continue the status quo. So I think we're at a crossroads. And this is the time we need to be having these discussions because we're the ones who are going to be helping to set the policies at our institutions. So what are the dangers with lecture capture? Well, the biggest danger is that we'll simply repeat lecturing as it is now. Right? We all know that lecturing is not a great way to do learning. Lecture capture, we record what's going on in the class and show it to the students. We're going to be perpetuating a system that none of us thinks works very well. I think the other danger is that lecture capture will follow the path of the learning management system. So what are some of the mistakes that I think we've made in the learning management system? I'm sure you guys can enumerate and elucidate some of the mistakes. I'll give some, and you can give some if you want to jump in. We'll go back one. So the first big mistake is content in our learning management systems is locked up. No one can get at it except the students and the professor in the one course that's going on. So it's not available throughout our institution, and it's certainly not available to lifelong learners, to alumni, to prospective students. It's all locked up. And the way we're going with lecture capture is locking up this incredible content. The other mistake we've made with the learning management system is we have this industrial, top-down system of control. We live in a Web 2.0 world of distributed authorship, distributed control, but our model for lecture capture is still very much an industrial one, and we're in danger of doing that with LMS is industrial, and we're in danger of doing that with lecture capture. Silos. Well, we all know silos where materials for one course are not available in materials for other courses. Faculty can't see what each other is doing. If we make that same mistake, we'll be replicating these silos that all of us say we want to knock down but seem to exist on all of our campuses. So the argument that I'm making with lecture capture is we need to find ways to experiment with this new tool. Now's the time. If we don't experiment now and try new things, we're going to lose that opportunity, and we're going to go down the path we went down with the learning management system. We've done some experiments at my institution, but they've not been enough. So at my institution, the course I taught in sociology, we had we loaded to YouTube all the materials from when I lectured and all the student materials, and it was great. It worked very well. We got a lot of traffic for the sociology topics, but it was just one course, one person doing it. It certainly wasn't systematic. We've had some other experiments where we have some other lectures going to YouTube, but again, it's not systematic. It's very much scattered around our campus. So one thing that we do know, though, is that faculty are going to publish directly to the web. They are going to use some of the platforms we'll talk about, YouTube, EDU, iTunes U, and some other platforms. They are going to do this. Whether we support them, whether we help them, whether we try to spread it, some of them are going to do this anyway. And I think we need to be ready for this. The best example I know is Michael Wesch. I mean, he started out, he published his work with his students and became professor of the year like 2 years later. He became incredibly popular, really built his reputation on the materials that he got up from his classroom in YouTube. We also know that students are going to publish directly, that we can institutionally support this, put some policies around, try to get a handle on this, and help them, or they're going to do it without us. The tools are too easy to create and publish to places like YouTube, so it's going to happen. Why are professors going to happen? Well, the main reason professors will publish their materials to YouTube is reputation. The same reason that professors publish to journals, they don't get paid, or we don't get paid, but that's how reputation is made. Nowadays, reputation can be driven by where you are in social media. So great lecturers will know this, and they'll get themselves up. There's all this concern that people will want to hold their stuff private. I don't think so. I think some faculty will see the advantages of getting their stuff out, and they'll get it up to YouTube. Pedagogy. We're starting to see some faculty who want their students to be part of the larger conversation, and they're pushing their students to publish, to create multimedia, publish them to YouTube, publish them to iTunes, the same thing with course blogs. So for pedagogical reasons, we're also going to see this. Where we're heading now is that unless we put some policies around this, the technologies of presentation capture and YouTube will run ahead of our institutional policies and campus policies. We're going to be playing catch up unless we can really try to go ahead of this curve. So there are some self-publishing problems that we're all aware of. The biggest problem that we have is that campuses are very wary to allow or to support their faculty or their students publishing to public places like YouTube, because campuses are very protective of their brands. Spent a long time building them up. They want what's out there to represent what's best at their institutions. If everyone's putting up materials and putting the institution name, there's a risk or a fear that it will erode the brand. There's also a lot of concern that if faculty or students are putting stuff up, materials on the web, videos on YouTube, using lecture capture and presentation systems, that they'll violate copyright, and the copyright holders will come after the institutions. So there's a lot of fear around this. And there's a lot of fear that what's going to go up there is not quality, right? It's not the best of breed, and the institutions are worried that it's not going to represent their institutions well. But people will do it anyway. Some of the tools we'll talk about allow just one-touch publishing, allow you to record on your computer, publish it directly up to YouTube, as easy as can be, as easy as saving to your desktop. A lot of the lecture capture systems don't yet, and we'll talk about this, and if they don't, people will find workarounds. Anyone who really wants to get their stuff up to public places will find ways to convert and upload their content. So we need to be proactive. So go ahead. Okay, so let's talk about YouTube EDU really quickly. Go ahead. So all of you guys know YouTube EDU, right? Have you guys all gone there? I went there, and this slide's a little bit grainy, but what it shows is just some of the traffic that it gets at. So Oregon State is 62,000, or is that 82,000 or 62,000? 82,000 for one of their channels. YouTube EDU is incredibly popular, and it's growing every day. These numbers are going up. So this is already being used, although if you look at it, a minority of the material up at YouTube EDU is from lecture capture systems. And I just grabbed some of the top channels here, Oregon State, Columbia, fine. Okay, you can go. And iTunes U is the other big one in this field. iTunes U is just an incredible growing every day. Who here, by the way, publishes materials to iTunes U? Okay. Who here publishes to YouTube EDU? Okay, still the minority. So I grabbed the Stanford site here. They're adding tons and tons of material, and they're starting to do some of their lecture capture materials. So we know that these platforms, YouTube EDU and iTunes U, are ready to go. They're ready to receive materials. Individual schools are also publishing a lot of their materials. So the granddaddy of this, of course, is MIT, pushing a lot of their stuff out there. We also see Yale. And the difference between MIT or Yale and the YouTube EDU is the materials on Yale are very highly produced. They're spending a lot of money for each of their courses. They're using camera operators, and they're having very high quality. So it's not the lecture capture model. It's more the video quality. But they are getting their stuff out there from the institutional perspective. Carnegie Mellon is pushing a lot. UC Berkeley. So lots and lots of schools are either pushing their materials to iTunes U or YouTube EDU or doing their own websites. Okay, let's go to the lecture capture market. So we know that the platforms exist to get this stuff out there. Okay? The lecture capture market is incredibly fragmented right now. And this is all falling out. And I think this fragmentation gives us an opportunity to influence how their feature set goes and how their product roadmap goes. One of the arguments that I'm making is all of these lecture capture vendors need to make the choice to publish up to YouTube or iTunes U as easy as possible, to make it as easy to publish up publicly to as it is to publish to the learning management system. So we're going to quickly go through. I just went and grabbed all the lecture capture vendors and looked at who has actual ability to publish directly up to these public sites. So Echo, no, it's not. They don't have this capability now. Tegrity. No. Sonic Foundry. No. Camtasia Relay. TechSmith is somewhat different. In their version of their product now, you can't, but some of their other products like Jing, they do have that ability. So that is definitely on their roadmap. Opencast. And this is a big unknown. Opencast is set to very much disrupt the lecture capture market. But there's a real question, will all the materials being created, or will there be the option for the materials created on Opencast to be available open source for the open education movement? We don't know. Panopto? I don't know. There's some wild cards in all this. Podcast producer, we're not quite sure if Apple is in this business. They're not here. They don't have a booth. When they come and talk to you, they say, oh, yeah, podcast producer, that can be a great tool for publishing lectures. Right up to iTunes U, it's built in. I haven't quite figured out if Apple is in the lecture capture business. Is anyone using Podcast Producer to court? I don't know. Right. 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 So they're kind of restricting it. Apple's kind of a wild card, yeah.
I think they'll launch to their iTunes U.
Right. Right, and right, you can't now YouTube. I really do wonder if Apple is going to get into this space, but they're not here, so we can't ask them. Adobe is another wild card to me. They certainly dominate the synchronous meeting space and have all the technology to do lecture capture. If they ever really got into this, one way they could differentiate themselves is to have the materials available publicly. Are they going to do it? I don't know, but when you talk to Adobe, please talk to them about what their plans are for lecture capture. And then there's smaller vendors like Encast. So you can see that the lecture capture market, I mean, that's like, what, 10 vendors already? None of them, as far as I can tell, offer the ability very easily to publish up to, yep. Right, iTunes U, right. And you have to have the institutional account, right. So what I'm trying to do is say, to go beyond that is, you still have to work through central IT to get the iTunes U account, right? Right, which is a limiting step. A lot of institutions don't want to do that. There's a negotiation. It doesn't give the instructor the ability right then to decide what they want to do, or for the software products, anyway, for the software capture products, for the students to decide if they want to publish publicly. Yep.
Wimba,
all right. Wimba's not on my list, so another one of the, yep. Relay, you are pushing directly to YouTube. All right, which version of Relay are you on?
Two.
All right. Okay, are you pushing to YouTube EDU or?
To our main channel.
Awesome. All right, are people pushing it to public places like YouTube from Panopto?
Yeah.
Cool. All right, so Panopto is one of them. Great. All right. Another wild card in all of this is the meeting folks like Tanberg. Has Tanberg, or who here has kind of high-end virtual conferencing meeting software that you're using on your campus? Anyone doing that? You know, they're kind of saying that they're going to get into the lecture capture space because they have all the equipment to do it. So they could be another player. So this market is incredibly fragmented. Okay. We're seeing tons and tons of lecture capture companies talking about their features, their pricing. As far as I can see, none of the lecture capture companies, and maybe there's lecture capture companies, people here, right? As far as I can see, you're not talking publicly about your tool as creating content for the open education movement. Right? You're talking about student convenience, you're talking about better learning outcomes, but you're not talking about the open education movement. Am I wrong?
Entirely.
All right, good. I'd like being wrong. Maybe Panopto is doing it better than anyone else. Tell us.
Well,
Be loud.
Too much about
open education. Okay, let's hold that point, because the point is that as long as the institutions are the payers, and institutions are kind of worried about getting all this stuff publicly and allowing faculty to do this, it's hard for the lecture capture providers actually to make that point and have that as a feature and kind of lead this movement towards open education. All right, let's hold on to that, because I think it's a good one. All right, so the question is, at least for me, is how do we get from here to there? I mean, so it's really clear to me is that we have all these recording and capturing technologies that are coming in, room-based, computer-based, they're becoming accessible and ubiquitous. Everyone can have them. We also have these great platforms for sharing, for publishing, sharing, and finding video, right? They're both out there, but they're not really meeting up. So that's the argument. So the question is, do we want these to meet up? Like, do we want it standard that faculty and student with one button can get their stuff up there? So that's a question that we're going to kind of break up and talk about. And if we do, if we do think that lecture capture, presentation capture can be disruptive, can be a way to rapidly create content and share, how do we get there? So what I'd like to do, if it's all right with you guys, is we have this like great room, and you guys are like all together, and you're at tables, right? So what I'd like to do is to you guys to kind of get with your table mates, right? And talk about just those two things. What are the obstacles to get there? Right? Why are we not getting there? And what, if you did want to get there, what would be the solutions? And then we're going to ask you and you're going to tell us and then we'll be done. Does that sound like a reasonable thing? You guys into talking to each other? All right. Let's do it. So turn. We'll do it for 5 minutes. All right, let's do it. You guys chatting enough? All right, who wants to go first? And it's gonna be really quick, and we're gonna go pass the mic really fast. Who wants to go first? All right.
Who owns it?
Wait for the mic. Wait, what's your name?
Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Who owns the material? Is it owned by the institution or owned by the faculty member? So the first thing that has to be established is who owns the material to be able to have the right to distribute it, copy it, or otherwise.
I don't have any of the answers. I don't know. Anyone want to answer that? Who owns the material?
You know, the crazy in me would be, if we're talking about this generation of students, though, the question I would have is, does it matter? Because that content, regardless of whether it's through official channel or unofficial channel, gets distributed. And people pass notes, but we're just talking about it digitally. I mean, you if that content is engaging, I guess if that makes sense, that content's going to be shared regardless of whether it's you sharing it or students.
All right, great. Any other answers for who owns the material? That's a great obstacle. Oh, wait for the mic. We're being recorded. Sorry.
One of the points we came up with was we do have policies on ownership in a lot of institutions, but I'm looking at it from the IT side. I get, you know, the academic vice president or administration coming to me and saying, where is that material? It was prepared 3 years ago. And I go, I don't know. I don't have it. It was published somewhere and that instructor left. So when you talk about IT holding on to stuff, sometimes it's because we're asked to hold on to it. So if it goes out into that open area and the school thinks they own it because they have a policy, but they can't track it or see it or find it, where are you?
Okay, and so that's another obstacle, is the whole retention policy. Any responses before we go on for other obstacles or solutions? Any responses to this whole retention issue?
We talked in my group as well. We all talked about the same issue about ownership. But in Canada, where I'm from, there's no question the faculty member has ownership, period. And so it's very different. I've never had this discussion before with people because it doesn't come up.
All right. Well, we could all do this in Canada. All right. Here you go.
One solution might be to start looking at the Creative Commons licenses for your school so that people could get a better understanding of their ownership when they put stuff out there and they sort of feel a little bit more pride and they have some control over what happens with it once it's out there.
It's an awesome idea to put this stuff under Creative Commons. Is anyone doing that or thinking about doing that? All right, we good. All right, so let's go on to who else wants to report back on obstacles or solutions?
I keep thinking that one of the big obstacles is we have too many choices, and that sounds kind of anti-American, but you know, it's kind of like going to the toothpaste aisle. I mean, you just got way too many choices for toothpaste. Do we really need that many? I mean, just on my campus. For lecture capture, I have Adobe Presenter and Camtasia and Adobe Connect, which are Presenter Connect are separate products. We have Echo 360, we use iTunes U, and we use YouTube. And so when a faculty member comes to me and says, I'm interested in lecture capture, I've got a whole menu of choices for them. And it's a bit overwhelming, some of these. And they say, well, which one should I choose? And then I have to go through the big conversation of, okay, well, let's find out what you really want to do and what kind of IT skills do you have. And it's kind of overwhelming for me because I got to support all those things. It's nice having choices. I mean, don't get me wrong, but you know, all of them have problems. I mean, iTunes U is not the easiest, even though Apple would like you to think that it is. It's not the easiest. YouTube is great, but then we have the login problems with one username and password, and they got to go off to go through me. It's just a mess. So I don't really know what the answer is. I'm just juggling all the balls right now, and I'm trying to keep them in the air is what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I feel your pain also. And we get so wrapped up in implementation. And I think that's right, that these companies like YouTube, Google, or Apple, they don't make this very easy. Like, they say they do, but in my experience, is anyone here from Google or Apple? Yeah, I don't think they make it. So we get all wrapped up in implementation, and we kind of lose sight of what sort of bigger disruptive things we can do. All right, who else wants to report back? From another group. Come on. Right, Panopter, right? All right.
I think the big issue is how are faculty able to do it? I mean, without having an administration to support them, install the material, help them set it up, make sure it works, pay for it, how are they able to actually make high-quality lectures?
From my perspective, the administration, they're installing these systems, right? They're paying for them because students are demanding it. Well, let me ask, who here has some sort of presentation or lecture capture system on your campus? All right, who here thinks you'll have it by the end of the year? Or who's looking? Well, maybe it's the same number. Anyway, it seems like it's happening. So the question is, the administration's installing it for one reason, but some people want to use it for another reason. Is that actually possible? Do you have to work around the administration, or can you work with them for this open learning thing? Yep.
I think one of the other points, and I'm sort of saying this from the standpoint, I do all the training for our faculty, like when we have our LMS system. I got to tell you, you got faculty right now that are across the board just in technology, just in learning how to use Blackboard. Then you try to give them this. You've got some of those professors that are going to be early adopters. They're going to be great. The problem is, with some dynamics, some of those division chairs don't like that because it makes them bring more attention to them as opposed to some of their colleagues. So you got some political things going on also to consider when you do this, depending on how you roll it out, because you do see some of those early adopters that are out there progressive using this. They're the ones that own the iPads, the iPhones, all that, you know, I heard earlier the iThing. They have all the iThing products. And I think that's something else political within the ranks sometimes can be a challenge for using any system. I don't care, regardless of provider.
All right, so we have a lot of obstacles, right? We have ownership. We have technology. We have politics. Does anyone come up with any solutions for... It's a pretty simple thing. We got all these tools in place. We want to put it up so everyone can see them. Turn them all off. you have solutions. Sort of.
Okay, it's not a complete solution, but what we've been successful with doing is in using student workers, especially federal work study workers, so we're only paying for 25% of their salaries. And what we are now in the process of doing is, now we're not putting up to YouTube or anything like that. We just have faculty members who are capturing at this point in time. We'll send a student out to capture, and then we have our graphic artist / videographer who is in charge kind of the quality portion, and we're training our students in order to have them convert lectures on the back end to put it up on whatever type of a format we need.
Okay, so that use students is one solution to actually get the stuff made. So the next part is, okay, how do you get that stuff public? I think this comes down to there's got to be people on campus who believe enough and want to make this happen. I mean, I think it's going to take some leadership. All right, anyone else want to report back with either obstacles or solutions? There's some good discussions going on here. Anyone? All right, we're done, and hopefully we'll come back next year, and we'll see lots and lots of materials up from our lecture capture systems publicly available. Thanks, everyone. It was a good discussion.